Hello, welcome to the episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJH287, also on LinkedIn, where I post more content, the website, dsmsports.net, where you can find every episode and blog posts and other good stuff. And of course, follow the podcast on whichever podcast platform is your favorite. Awesome, awesome show for you guys today. I really enjoyed this conversation. Just a great look at college athletics, at the changing nature of it, and really just a whole history, as well as some insight into what content works across multiple sports. My guest on the podcast today is Jordan Moore. He is Chief Creative Officer and also a broadcaster for USC Athletics. That is University of Southern California, not South Carolina, in case we have some Southerners listening. USC Trojans. Jordan just offers a ton of good information and insight. He's been there for a long time. As social media has really grown up, he's been a part of it, having a front row seat and really playing a leadership role throughout. He talks about how they manage across sports, how they make sure that each sport has everyone has a finger on the pulse across SIDs, across the social team, graphics team, creative team, video team. He's also a broadcaster himself, and it's cool to hear about him playing that hybrid role. Just a tremendous conversation coming up as you hear about the social media behind one of the premier brands in college sports, as I talk to Jordan Moore of USC Athletics. Back on the show with today's guest. Now I am joined by Jordan Moore. He is Chief Creative Officer and broadcaster for USC Athletics. That is University of Southern California, the Trojans, in case anyone is from SEC country, I think in South Carolina. But so excited to pick his brain, learn all about the Trojans. And first of all, welcome to the podcast today, Jordan.
Hey, it's good to be here. Happy to talk about all this and talk with you today.
Hell yeah. So psyched to pick your brain, learn more about your role and really overseeing, again, one of the biggest brands of college athletics and sports overall in the country and the world. Before we get into the meat of our discussion, Jordan, tell us about you. Tell us about your background, your career path, your stops along the way, any tips for folks that kind of want to try to do what you do.
Yeah, I've been out in Los Angeles for more than half my life now, so I guess I think of myself as a Los Angelino, but I'm born and raised in New Jersey, so all the way in the other coast. I grew up, as a Big Ten fan, as a New York fan, Yankees, Giants, Rangers, Knicks. Those are all my teams, huge Northeast sports fan in that sense. And, I always knew what I wanted to do, and that was to be a broadcaster. And so when it came time to go to college, I really just looked at the schools that had the best broadcast journalism departments that were also paired with major sports schools. And so ultimately, Syracuse and USC are really the two there. I thought it was time to get out of the Northeast and try something different. So I found the warm weather in Los Angeles and never left. Great timing. When I got to USC in 2001, that was the same year Pete Carroll got to USC. Wow. So my 4 years were pretty awesome in college, culminating in the 55-19 national championship game.
Hell yeah.
Over Oklahoma, down in Miami, one of the great weekends of my life, and then went straight into broadcasting, called minor league baseball for 3 years out here, an independent league, called high school football, high school basketball, called anything I could possibly get someone to pay me to do, and then made a little bit of a pivot. I had been writing my own blog. At the time, back when blogs were a thing that people did, mostly just have fun with it. But I had a lot of people at USC that knew me and were reading it. So when Pete Carroll went to the Seahawks, he took his social media person with him, and USC thought of me. I interviewed with other candidates, but ultimately got that job and kind of made a little bit of a career pivot. Focusing on the social media stuff, became their first director of social media and really started the social media program here. I remember in 2010, Instagram didn't even exist yet. Twitter was just text, and Facebook was really the giant. That was our primary focus, Facebook and a little bit of YouTube and then the blog, as I said, and was sort of covering the team. And then, the roles just sort of expanded. I mean, I've been here 13, 14 years now. And then along the way, I was able to sort of create relationships that allowed me to get back into broadcasting. So I started the coaches show here, which we call Trojans Live, which is sort of your classic coaches show, radio show once a week in football season. And then ultimately became the basketball voice. And then on the football broadcast, I do sideline. I host the pregame show. as well. So wear a lot of hats around here. I mean, it's crazy, and we'll get into it how much the, in particular, the business has changed. The creative and the social media side of the business has just exploded in the last decade.
I mean, hell, man, you're living quite a dream. You're doing both. Like, you wanted to grow
Yep.
up a broadcaster, then you really enjoyed the social media side, and now you're like, why not both of them? Like, that's really cool and admirable how you're able to accomplish that. I want to back up a little bit too. Like, what did your college experience look like from an experience perspective? Were you already working with USC Athletics or working outside of a USC? You mentioned the Independent Bay Baseball League team. I don't know if that was during your undergrad experience at all. Like, how did you start to develop those skills, early on? And also, like, if you can mention it, what does the career path for an aspiring broadcaster look like today? Would it be similar today as it would have been for you 10, 15 years ago?
I probably could have done more in college. Looking back on it, or just now that I've been here as a worker and I've seen how some of these incredible overachievers that I see as students on a day in and day out basis. I think I was sort of an achiever, not under or over during my time here. But yeah, I definitely got reps, mostly with the student radio station, calling, a lot of college baseball, some basketball, some football. Talk radio show, just things like that. Just turning the mic on and trying to figure things out. But I think I really cut my teeth probably after USC in the minor league baseball. And the reason is it's not so much about baseball. It's that baseball's the hardest sport to call because it's just you and the mic, and the game can
So
be
much time to
endless.
fill.
Yeah. So really, by comparison, basketball and football are easy, having called all three. And baseball, when I think it was 80 game seasons in that independent league.
Wow.
So you just it's all you. It's just you for 4 hours, and every now and then I have a color commentator, but a lot of solo broadcasts as well. And you got to figure it out, and you got to make it work, and that's how you learn. And the truth is, maybe the getting into the broadcasting business has changed a little bit. I don't know if minor league baseball is necessarily the first job that everyone's going to do. I think probably this day and age, the first job everyone's going to do is podcasting, because it's something that kind of everyone can do. But whatever it is, it's just getting reps. Like that is the only way to get better at this. Like, I went to one of the most prestigious communication schools, in the country, at USC, but I didn't learn anything about being a play-by-play guy. I mean, it's just not a class. I think maybe Dan Patrick's, sort of broadcasting school does teach that, but most schools do not teach that. The only way to really learn it is to do it. And so that's the trick, is whether it's, I mean, I was calling high school basketball games from the stands, sitting next to the parents. This is not fancy stuff at all. But it doesn't really matter what it is. It's fun as long as people are passionate about it. But even if they aren't, if you're able to just do it, you just got to get the reps, because that's the only way you're going to get better.
Is there like is your role in particular is so unique? Is that hybrid role? Like, is there anyone else in college athletics that is a full-time broadcaster and also oversees social media and creative for college athletics? Or like, how did this hybrid role kind of come about for you?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just sort of came about. There were sort of two parallel lines that happened. And listen, the truth of all business and broadcasting is certainly no different. When you're looking to get hired at something, it is always going to be a little bit more about who than what you know. And so, just being here at USC, I was able to create relationships, so that when openings happened and they knew I had this ability, I was able to seize those opportunities. That's typically what happens. I mean, I always say that very few broadcasting jobs are hired by broadcasters. So then ultimately they're hired by people that don't have the ability or the background to do it. So what are they looking at? Okay, maybe they have an opinion, or a sports fan, they have an opinion who sounds good, who doesn't, but pretty much everyone sounds good on their tape. Everyone's reels are, for the most part, sound pretty good. So ultimately it's going to come down to relationships. And so I think just, the uniqueness of my role just goes hand in hand with the fact that I've dedicated, more than half my life to this institution. And so I have a lot of relationships, with people inside of it, and our fans and our donors and all those people as well, and our coaches. And So just building trust and building those relationships, and then once you get the gigs proven, you can do it. I mean, that's where the productivity needs to come in. That's
Totally.
where the ability needs to come in. And that's, you get the opportunity now. Now you have to prove that you're worthy of it.
Well, we will talk a little more about broadcasting throughout this podcast, but I'm going to stop myself from going too geeky into it now because I totally could for the next hour just ask you all about broadcasting and in this day and age. But let's touch briefly on what social media looked like when you started and how it kind of obviously blew up over the last 10, 15 years. I did it start off as like in a just a an enhancement to what SIDs are already doing? Hey, this is part of sports information. Hey, this is a marketing thing. Hey, this is like something you could do on the side while you're also doing like sports information as your main gig or PR or broadcasting. Like, how did it look like back then? And what were some of those inflection points along the way?
Yeah, I think at USC, it was really born out of football first. And just this idea that football had, they started what was called then the Ripsit blog. And that was sort of how it started. And then they really built a lot of it out of Pete Carroll's personality. He was so open and modern, if you will. So the initial accounts were his YouTube channel, his Twitter handle. And so he was one of the early sort of social media celebrities in that sense. So the issue was when he left, it left with him. So the first thing that I was really tasked to do was build it around USC, USC Athletics, USC Trojans as a brand. And again, as I said back then, really the first focus was on building out a Facebook page. And then the sort of daily blog coverage, and immediately the priorities changed to go from being sort of this inside football blog to being this all athletics blog. And that was really at the behest of the athletic director, Pat Hayden, at that time, who came in almost at the same time that I did. So he was just getting started. And so we sort of made that shift to like, okay, this is going to cover all of athletics. It's not just going to cover football. But yeah, I mean, those early days, it was me as the director of social media, and then two video people. And we were separate from SIDs. I mean, obviously, it's something we worked people we worked with, but at that point, there were no sport accounts, so they didn't really run social media very much. They were really doing classical SID work. They've now since become a much larger part of the social media organization that we have today. But at that point in 2010, that was not the case. And it just sort of grew slowly from there, mostly because it's what the teams demanded. Recruiting was obviously the biggest thing that brought it to life, in this sense of if you're good at this, recruits will go to your school. I've never actually bought that theory, but it's been very good for my business. So, we sort of look at some other key indicators for success outside of just recruiting, but it's a big part of it, and it's a huge part of why the staffs have grown. But yeah, those early days, was it was really the skill to have back then was writing. And I still think it's a hugely important skill in this business. But if you were to say, what's the one skill that you needed to succeed in social media back then, it was the ability to write, because, whether it was a blog or whether it was Twitter, it was very text-based.
Totally. And I mean, ultimately too, like, and you get this even as a broadcaster, it comes down to storytelling and how can we tell stories that get recruits to want to come here, get fans to want to come to games and to donate, get students to want to apply and become part of the environment as well. And I think that is one thing I hope at least remains a key principle, no matter how the medium changes, that it's all about just, powerful storytelling at the end of the day.
For sure. And technology has just changed the way that we're able to tell stories.
Holy. So I guess like in a perfect world, every single team has a dedicated multi video person, dedicated motion graphics person. If we had all the resources in the world, but that's not the way it generally works. So how do you guys ultimately? What does the organization look like now when it comes to social media staffing? And like allocating resources from season to season, from team to team, trying to have a relatively equal share of making sure every sport is getting their time in the spotlight. Student athletes are getting, a good mix of people being featured. And what do you guys look to think about building up that org chart? Do you look at other Pac-12 schools. I know Pac-12 is no longer a thing, but or
Yeah.
will be soon. Other schools that are of USC's ilk, and whatever that may mean. Like, what does your charter look like, and what kind of has guided how you guys, go about constructing that team?
As my title of Chief Creative Officer, all it really means is I lead our creative team here for the athletic department. So that guides our athletics account and then every sport account with the exception of football. So football has a 5-person creative team, which is separate from us. So they have two video, two design slash photo, and one social kind of thing. So they have 5 people to sort of divide those responsibilities. And we work hand in hand with them, but they're sort of part of a separate structure from us. Our structure has, besides myself, has 2 full-time social media people, and then also has an in-house team reporter who's sort of has a more modern version of that blogger role that I discussed earlier. And then we have 4 video positions. 3 graphic design positions, 2 photographers who are technically independent contractors, but they are really part of our team. And then there's 8 SIDs that are now called brands and communications. They still have their PR comms role, but they also some of them have social media responsibilities. So there's 8 of them as well. So that's what makes up our team. And then we have an army of students as well. I mean, that's part of working in college athletics is you have a student staff too. So if you have really talented students, they can play a major role
Away.
in your organization, at least for a time being. And so yeah, I mean that's sort of our group as it sits, which is a far cry certainly from what it used to be. And in terms of where that sits compared to quote unquote the competition, I mean a lot of that sort of depends on how many student athletes you're serving and how many sports. I think it was pretty standard where we're at, maybe on the high side in terms of Pac-12. Now we're headed over to the Big Ten. Some of these schools like Ohio State and Michigan, they have bigger staffs than we do. They also service more sports than we do, and more student athletes than we do. Those are a little bit bigger, I think, than our staffs if you were to look at the directory. I'll know more about the Big Ten this time next year.
What kind of guides how you guys go about, putting that staff to work? I mean, yes, every sport has their season, has their games, has their wins and losses. But when it comes to, hey, we want to feature this student athlete, or we want to do something around this historical milestone, or we want to do a bigger feature on this program, like, is it just, it's just stuff happens organically, or are SIDs kind of like, are you asking them to sort of keep you guys apprised and pitching things? Are you guys trying to like have a bit of a like, are you looking at a content calendar and be like, hey, we did something big on whatever women's basketball this week, so like ne next month let's make sure we hit on whatever cross country, track and field, name your sport.
Yeah, so what we've done here over the last couple of years and how things have changed, we went from what I would call a production-based model to an individual sport model. And so the way it used to be, we were like a production house, and so you would say like, oh, hey, we need a lacrosse video, and then it would just go into through the video team, and somebody would do it and spit it back out, and then the next time you need a lacrosse video, somebody else would do it. And so what we've changed now in the sort of individual sport model, teams, pods, whatever you want to call it. Every single sport knows who their social media person is, who their SID is, who their graphic designer is, who their video person is, and who their I guess that's everybody, right? Graphic, social, and video. So you have that little mini team within your larger creative team. And so those groups are meeting, and they're coming up with their content calendars and their ideas, and they're working hand in hand with the coaching staffs and the players. And so what you create is not just having SIDs embedded in programs, but everybody is. So our graphic designer knows the student athletes, and our video people are traveling and are part of the team and know all the stories. And so that familiarity has really led to much greater success, particularly on our individual sport accounts.
And are those SIDs, like, especially when it comes to going on the road, are they like serving as almost like boots on the ground in some cases, or are they sending back like, here's some footage I took on my iPhone, here's a couple of photos I snapped, or are even posting themselves to like Instagram stories? Like, how does that, how do you guys try to make sure that There does feel like there's an always on like content feed for all these programs, because I mean ultimately there is.
Yeah, ultimately, we don't want SIDs to be the content creators. We want them to serve as the ideas, and we want our video, photo, and design staff to create the content and raise the level of it. So, we will travel. We will travel depending on the sport, different people. That's sort of up to the sport a little bit in terms of what they value, whether it's video, whether it's photos, whether it's social or SID, whatever it is. So the travel piece sort of depends on the sport. Ultimately we want the content to be of the highest level. So we have sort of trimmed down on this kind of guerrilla, hey, I'm here, I got this stuff, and make it a little bit more strategic and planned. It doesn't mean we're using our phones a ton. We are to create content, but even then we want it to be purposeful. So there's a reason we shot it with a phone, kind of thing. So I mean, the reason we created this model is so that instead of going, hey, I didn't want to bother anybody, or hey, I didn't know who to go to, you know exactly who to go to, and they're not bothered. And so, we make sure that the people that are really good at what they do do what they do.
Where does things sort of fit in there in terms of like I'm picturing stuff like it, where it at least looks like a student athlete may have initiated or created themselves, like when you have that locker room TikTok video, or some of these more raw feeling things that are like a quick video story on as the team's getting on the bus. Like is that something that you guys are like whatever, as long as it's cool, like go for it. Is there a discussion about those kinds of things? Is that not something that really SC Athletics does across sports, where you have like whatever? Again, I'm just thinking of the TikTok dances, even though I'm probably sound like a freaking boomer saying that.
No, I mean, if it's student athlete generated content, then that's a whole nother piece of it. I mean, the whole space is because of the collab tool, particularly on Instagram, has allowed for so much more collaboration than it used to. I mean, I think the collab tool on Instagram has been one of the truly pivotal moments in this business over the last decade. Because Instagram used to be so siloed, and now we can share in it. So we very much encourage our student athletes to be content creators themselves if that's something that they're interested in. We don't want anyone who isn't interested in it to do it. But social media is a participatory sport for sure, and that's something that we express to them. So we love to collab with our athletes, in terms of the type of content, I mean, we are all for TikTok dances and whatever's trending and whatever is capturing the imagination of a social media audience. I have no particular interest in making our grid look perfect in those kind of ideals. I know that's something that you see sometimes where it's just like, oh, we're not going to do that because it doesn't look, I get maybe if you're Nike or something like that, then that matters to you. I don't think in the college athletic space that that is a major priority for us. We're a little bit thinking more on a post-to-post basis. Will this perform? Will it not? Does it meet our strategic goals? Does, those kind of things, rather than, is it pretty enough to be on our grid?
I mean, and ultimately some of that raw stuff that looks like a student athlete just grabbed the team's account on their phone and did something in the locker room with their teammates. Like that's the best stuff for recruits to see, is to see that camaraderie and see those friendships and see something that they want to be a part of as well. Let's take a quick step back to Jordan. You talked a little about like, yes, recruiting is a big part of what coaches want to get out of social media. But there's a lot more to it, of course. There's a lot more than just recruiting. So when you're thinking about guiding strategy across the board and with individual pods or individual sports, what are some of those key things that you want to hit on that are top of mind as you're thinking about, bigger strategic goals?
Yeah, it depends on the account. To me, from an athletic side, we need to make sure we handle all the revenue pieces that come with college athletics. It is a business, so we do a ton of corporate integration. We do a ton of trying to get people to games, and what's our marketing campaign and strategies. We do a ton of storytelling and narrative pieces and brand building and all those kind of things. So our athletics sort of serves as a central business hub in a lot of ways. And then on the individual sport accounts, we're really focused on telling the stories of our student athletes in multiple ways. We want to celebrate excellence. We want to celebrate winning. Those things are very important to USC, and honestly, those are the things that perform the best. But we also have a belief that if you make someone passionate about an athlete or interested in an athlete, that you're more likely to participate in social media, coming to games, supporting that team. The student athletes are always going to be what drives the machine around here. So those are the biggest goals from the individual sport accounts. We do a ton of recruiting stuff for the individual sports. It's not always public. It's some stuff we will do and put it out there for everybody, but some stuff is going to be personalized or at least individualized in the sense of, it's for an audience of one. That's messaged directly to them or messaged out in whatever way the team does. So we're a major part of that recruiting machine, sometimes publicly, sometimes a little bit more privately. Not always our central focus of what we're doing, for everyone to see.
Is it like, are you trying to balance as well or just who you're trying to reach on these social channels? Or, and maybe it varies by platform, maybe it doesn't, in terms of like, yes, you want to reach the recruits of tomorrow or the recruits of today. You want to reach the students, the applicants of tomorrow and the applicants of today. You want to reach the donors who may be maybe 25 years old, maybe 55 years old, might be 85 years old. So how do you think about trying to, especially when those donors are the ones and the parents buying tickets or whatever, are probably the ones that are footing the majority of the bill right now, at least when it comes to driving revenue. Of course, there's obviously social media sponsorship, as you alluded to as well. But like, are there demographics you have in mind? Are like, how do you think about, is it a platform strategy? Is it a messaging strategy? Is it a demographic strategy? Or is it ultimately just like, hey, let's put great content out there, and whether you are 8 or 80, it should resonate.
Yeah, there is content that is so good that whether you're 8 or 80, it resonates. So that's for sure. There is content that just sort of works for everybody. But we absolutely think about the demographics. By platform is an easy way to do it for sure, because you can see the data that certain generations use certain platforms. But ultimately, yeah, our audience is our fans. And you would theoretically hope the ticket buying fans. The people I'm most interested in are the parents and the families who are going to drive up from Orange County or around Los Angeles and come to games, or are going to go to alumni bars around the country and go to viewing parties, or going to buy merchandise, or participate in some way and be prideful of being a Trojan. That's my biggest audience. Social media is a shotgun. It's not a sniper rifle. And so sometimes I try to explain that to people. We'll get somebody that says, "Oh, I want to get this message to students, and let's put it on the athletics account." And I'm like, "Well, that's a really small percentage of the athletics account. How many students actually follow it? And then of that, what percentage is that of our total following?" So I don't want to alienate 95% of our followers with any post. Obviously, when you run something like an athletics account, not everyone's going to be interested in everything, and that's just the way it is. The sport accounts are going to have a little bit of a higher interaction rate. But you definitely do think about demographics, and that's why I do prefer to focus the recruiting strategy as much as we can on direct to consumer, if you will, because I think if you're gearing your account to 16-year-old boys, it's going to be very specific, and so there's certain content we need to make for that audience, but that just may not resonate with a 45-year-old parent with two kids. So we do try to service the wider audience instead of the smaller one on social.
And this is open-ended a bit, kind of a follow-up of like thinking about all that quote unquote like dark social content, the content that never sees light of day in the public light of day at least, but maybe ideally is seen by recruits, and you know, maybe high school coach. I don't know who else may be you know privy to those that more dark social content. But like, is I mean, how do you balance that of like spending time putting your team having your team spend time on a lot of this content that is meant for recruits, that is meant not for the public viewing audience? Like, is there a, I mean, there's really no limit. You guys can probably spend all day, every day working on stuff for individual recruits that coaches would love to get their hands on, but you also want to make sure you're serving the wider fan base. Like, have you found that balance to just be something you have to like, go by feel year to year? Is there a set, like, hey, we want to spend time with this, but not at the expense of other things we want to get done? Or is it just like, hey, we have to get certain stuff done, and then any extra time we have, we'll like work on recruits? Like, how do you ultimately think about that from a leadership perspective of trying to balance all these competing needs in some ways?
Yeah, I think the leadership from my perspective, the important part is constantly checking in with my creatives to make sure that they're not overloaded because I might not see the overload.
Mm-hmm,
So to your
right.
point, if you want to call it the dark content or whatever it is, again, I'm not going to necessarily see it where it's just like, hey, we didn't put anything out in this account today. It didn't look like you're doing anything. So,
Right.
if what you're doing is making, 25 recruiting graphics, well, that's a ton that you're doing. So, making sure that piece is communicated. On their side, I think what's important is to streamline things as much as possible, put practices into place. And, just as an example, we use a company that we send our photos to that cuts out all our athletes so that our designers don't spend a lot of time cutting out athletes so that it's just sort of done for them. So, you look for processes like that to streamline things. And then on the team side, it's again, when we create this personal nature of not faceless people working for you, but so and so is working for you, then it helps being like, hey, we can't do every single thing right now, or I need more of a heads up, that's something we push on a lot of people is like, hey, you knew that this was we knew signing day was coming for months. So if we have the athletes sign, let's get all the information so that we can make the graphics when we're ready and not the night before. So there's a lot of conversations like that, but I think most of our teams are pretty forgiving when it comes to that and understanding that it takes time to make graphics or videos or what have you. And we just try to schedule things out as much as possible so that our creatives don't get burnt out because that is the biggest issue in this industry
So
is
important.
burnout.
Totally. A few minutes left here with Jordan Moore, Chief Creative Officer and Broadcaster for USC Athletics. Jordan, there are so many things that are still on my mental checklist and physical checklist of things I want to make sure we touch on. But let's touch briefly on just the overall brand and I guess the brand of USC Athletics and how that looks across sports and over time. Like, is there flexibility? Like, is there a certain tone, personality, certainly like brand guidelines, color schemes, aesthetic, which I'm sure helps with that positivity you alluded to earlier. Like, how do you sort of make sure that there is a balance, but also a team can have its own personality? Or when a new coach comes in and wants to say, these are the things we want to hit on, this is the voice that we should have, if that even occurs, like, is there a certain uniform look and feel that every sport should or needs to have? Or is there a little bit of like, well, yes, as long as they have this, this, and this, then maybe lacrosse can look like this, beach volleyball can look like this, men's basketball can look like this when it comes to aesthetic and overall just the way that the presentation of social media, I guess.
Yeah, I think the answer is always both. We have created strict brand guidelines. That's something we have done over the last, 5, 10 years, so that there's sort of a clear playbook on what's allowed and what's not allowed. And so we have solved some of those things where people were taking our logo and putting palm trees behind it, and so then it becomes the beach volleyball logo. Like that's not happening anymore. We try to be pretty strict on some of those things so that our brand is not being bastardized in any way. With With that said, we also want the individual creativity of the designers and the creative teams around the individual teams, and then also the voice of the programs are just going to be different. In so many ways. I mean, our football program, as an example, is such a legacy brand. I mean, been around for 100 years and national championships and Heisman Trophy winners. And, so there's a certain voice that comes out of that account that is just different than our men's basketball brand, which is kind of always been the second team in town to UCLA and never historically has won anything. And all, so we take a little bit of a chippier, edgier, tone to our content. We are much more likely to poke at UCLA. In the football side, would be no reason to sort of stoop down to it, kind of thing. So those are the ways that you look at it. And again, I think what often gets confused, none of this is my opinion or my voice. This is what the brand would sound like if the brand had a voice. That's the goal, at least. So it's the voice that is coming from each individual account, that's ultimately the goal. The brand has to have a uniformity across the board so that you always know you're looking at a USC page. Whether you're looking at beach volleyball or lacrosse or football or whatever. But within that, I think we provide a lot of latitude for different looks each year, different looks within each season, and just allow the creatives to be creative and nothing to get stale.
No, I think that's really well put and a good way to think about it. Let's also talk about briefly on the. I mean, we won't go too deep into the NIL because we can spend all day, every day on that. There's so much to it. But just the rise of individual college athletes in general of athletes, it's been a superstar-driven sports ecosystem for many years now, especially at the pro level, and now becoming a little bit more so at the college level with the advent of NIL. And you think about USC, yes, it used to be like probably more coach-driven. Yes, you had your Matt Leinarts and your Reggie Bushes and all that, and Dwayne Jarrett from your time, Lendale White, and go on and on. But it was Pete Carroll. And now, yes, it is Lincoln Riley, but it was really Caleb Williams. And you think about like Juju Watkins. You think about, I mean, Isaiah Collier. And like so, how do you make sure that you are creating fans of the team versus fans of the individual, so that even when Caleb Williams goes off to the NFL next year, that people are just excited about being a USC football fan, especially if they just came to become USC football fans because they came because of Caleb Williams, or because they became women's basketball fans because of Juju Watkins. I mean, obviously she'll be there for many years to come, of course, like we hope. But how do you kind of, do you even think about that as being an issue to think about, of making sure that they aren't just fans of individuals, but they ultimately become fans of the team, everlasting?
Constantly. That is what we think about. I mean, that is the challenge of the job for sure. I mean, you said it extremely well. I'm not sure, that I have every single answer there, but that is absolutely the challenge. I mean, there's a very obvious use case going on right now for us. In May, we had 50,000 Instagram followers on our men's basketball account. It's now January, so 7 months later, 8 months later, we have 162,000 followers. I would love to tell you that that is because of some great strategy that myself and Aubrey Craig and Rich Rodriguez and the people that run this account did. And it's not. It's because we signed Bronny James. And Bronny James brought with him 100,000 fans to our account and counting. So that's absolutely the challenge. What we go into the content, we listen, we know that we're not going to be a Bronny James account. So these people are going to see, him in one out of every five posts, one out of every 10 posts for a while when obviously he wasn't even playing. Can you sell your culture, your team, your program, your school, everything that's exciting? Can you sell so that these people are, don't go away in a year? Some of them probably are going to, whenever he leaves. But I think if the program does well and carries on and is successful, what he has then done for us is create this cachet and made our program cool in a way that it wasn't cool before. And, we can benefit off that. But I will always tell you that the student athletes are bigger than our accounts. It's just a fact, and it's certainly true in Bronny's case. But we have a women's golfer named Amari Avery. I mean, she has like six times the followers that our women's golf account does. She's big time. She's got a Bank of America deal. Like she's legit. So they're our greatest ambassadors, but they're also, the reason that if we do create things, we just continue to stay tapped into them. We do a ton with our alumni. Like we will follow Bronny into the NBA. We will follow Amari into the LPGA tour. We'll follow Juju into the WNBA whenever that time comes. And so, hopefully there's sort of a lifetime commitment. This whole idea of, you're a Trojan for life. We do a ton of that. I mean, I posted yesterday. We did a post celebrating Taj Gibson. I mean, that's a guy that played basketball here 15 years ago, right? So, but we're still trying to stay tapped into that relationship and hopefully those fans too. And so we'll create a lot of content around those kind of things to stay tapped into those people. But ultimately you are, using their platform to sell your program. And if you don't, we constantly have conversations about, hey, if you have an opportunity like a Bronny, you have to capitalize on it because a year from now you might have 12 guys that no one's ever really heard of. And then, are you back to square one or did you accomplish something?
I mean, just a fascinating thing to think about, and not a new challenge in the pro sports world in particular. I mean, think about Bronny's father and how many people did the Cavs hope to keep around when LeBron left Cleveland? Or what the Golden State Warriors thinking about if and when the day comes that Steph retires, how can we make sure that they remain Warriors fans throughout time? So certainly something to continue to watch as players and student athletes become the faces of their programs in those ephemeral years they have in college. What
Yeah, I
were
think
the yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, the Warriors are a great example of somebody that's actually done it. And one of the things that they did was they parlayed their current popularity into overseas popularity and sort of become the team of a lot of countries around the world kind of thing. And so anyway, that's a good example of like, hey, we've got this moment right now with Steph and Draymond and Klay, and we're winning titles. Okay, what are we going to do with it? And you're always going to be popular in San Francisco, but they found a way to extend their audience.
I mean, you got to become a lifestyle brand in some ways. Like get people to really want your merch, to wear your gear around, and to make it be cool to be to be an SC fan, to be a Warriors fan, to be a Cavs fan or whatever it might be. What were the Jordan Ferguson of the shareable stat? I could seriously keep you all day. There are so many more things I wanted to talk about. We'll hit on this really briefly because I'd be remiss if I did not. And that is the Big Ten. This time next year, you will be a Big Ten school, competing against the likes of Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State, Iowa, all those Big Ten schools. So I guess just tell me about what this year has been like for you, or what the or ever going back even further, to when USC was first announced to be going to the Big Ten. What was communication and preparation like for you and your team? What was that moment like, and what are you kind of looking ahead to make sure that you give a proper send off to the Pac-12, but also hit the ground running with the Big Ten next year?
Yeah, I mean that moment was wild. I'll never forget. I mean being on a Zoom and having that news delivered to me because we basically I was just in the know at that time because we had to create a graphic as part of the announcement. So got to sort of find that out early, and it was shocking for sure. And listen, the whole thing is bittersweet. We love the Pac-12. We love the rivalries and the relationships that we've created here, and it's really a shame the way it's sort of gone down in a lot of ways, and a bit of a failure of leadership at times, certainly that has created this situation. So with that said, USC made the early decision to make that move, and in this game of musical chairs, got its spot secured before the competition did, and wisely did so. And so now sits in a pretty advantageous spot in what will be, one of the two biggest conferences in the country going forward. We'll see what the future holds. Everything seems to change year to year, maybe even day to day these days. But no, looking forward to what the Big Ten brings. I think the biggest thing from our perspective is the broadcast exposure. That's where the Pac-12 just really struggled. The Pac-12 network was pretty much a disaster. Actually, they created really nice content. So certainly to give them credit, all those people that were involved that did the work were very good at their jobs, but they never got the distribution deal really done. And so we were invisible when we play in our conference network. And that was very difficult from a brand social standpoint, a lot of different standpoints around here that makes it difficult when sort of games are happening and no one can see them or they basically don't exist. And then even then, the television deal was not, particularly great. A lot of late nights, a lot of week nights kind of situation where it just felt like you were playing when everyone else was asleep. I think there'll still be some of that. I think ultimately this you're always going to be in the Pacific time zone, and that provides another window for the television companies to use. But the Big Ten is just a massive television platform. The Big Ten network is a well-oiled machine. I think it's nice that we're going in with some West Coast partners in UCLA, Oregon, and Washington, so we can continue those relationships. But you look at our football schedule for next year, and it's exciting. I mean, it is. There's no other way to put it. When you see Michigan and Penn State and
Hell yeah.
Wisconsin on your schedule, you're fired up. We're opening with LSU in Vegas. We're playing Notre Dame still. We're playing UCLA still. We're playing at Washington. So the schedule's loaded. And that's just football. A bunch of our sports obviously are going to be a part of this and, get to compete in a premier conference in the country in many sports. Women's volleyball is going to be a great example of,
Hell yeah.
Pac-12 is good. The Big Ten is next level. I mean, you're talking about programs like Nebraska that sell out football stadiums for women's volleyball. So, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be eye-opening. It's going to be challenging, but all of that's fun.
From like a social media and content perspective, are you thinking about like we really like is there gonna be like an official send off, an official welcome, like the when that last baseball pitch is thrown, wherever the last sport's gonna be in spring, like we're gonna have a little like farewell Pac-12, thanks for the memories, or when like is there a certain point in August, September when it's like, hey, this is our moment, this is our build up to our debut in the Big Ten officially, like are do you consider those sort of tentpole things, or just kind of being like sort of a gradual farewell on a team by team basis or whatever it might be?
Yeah, I think what's awkward about it is going to there's a little bit of a crossover season. I mean, because to be honest, as a football program, in a lot of ways, we're already in the Big Ten because our last Pac-12 season is over. So, our Big Ten schedule's out, and when you look at selling season tickets and those kind of things, we're selling the Big Ten, but we're not officially in the Big Ten yet. That doesn't happen until later in the summer. So yeah, I expect to do all of those things. The great opportunities to lean into what we're best at, which is sort of paying tribute to our history, and then also setting the stage for exciting days to come. But I do look forward to sort of that being over, and we can just fully lean into the Big Ten side of it, because for us, it's been a little while now. We, as I mentioned, we sort of secured our spot early, so we've had this in the back of our mind for a while, and I'm excited for it to be in the front of our mind. And yeah, that'll be what our 2024-25 strategy is built around, the excitement of going to a new conference.
Totally. All these first trips to X venue, all these first matchups against X team, like what it's an exciting new chapter. And who would have thought when you guys in UCLA made that commitment, so many months ago, so many years a while ago, that the Pac-12 would no longer exist as we know it today. And by 2024, 2025, but still time, we'll see. But George, so much good stuff, man. We're gonna have some more fun with you in our Catch and Shoot segment. First episode's shareable stat coming up right now. Such good stuff with Jordan Moore, Chief Creative Officer and Broadcaster for USC Athletics. We'll have some more fun with them coming up, so stick around for some quick hitting questions. Lots more good insights and stories there. But first, this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat comes from TikTok, and it's looking at an account you may not be aware of, but you might have seen it before, and it's the at New Heights Rewind. You might know the New Heights podcast, hosted by the Kelce brothers, Jason and Travis Kelce, of course, the NFL stars, and that podcast is often, around the number one spot of the podcast charts, whether sports or otherwise. And they also have, over 4 million followers on TikTok for their New Heights TikTok account. But the At New Heights Rewind account, which only has a couple of thousand followers, the last 10 videos, and that's where the stat, shareable stat comes in, the last 10 videos posted on their TikTok is averaging 23,000 views. And some are getting, you know, tens of thousands of views, some even hundreds of thousands of views. And it's a really interesting insight as I've seen more and more start to verticalize or fragment or at least add to their TikTok posting, especially when followers, you know, doesn't necessarily mean as much. It still means something, of course. But when your main goal is just to get eyeballs on your content, what could it mean to really spread the love across more verticalized, more specific accounts like the New Heights guys do? And it's not just New Heights Rewind. There's New Heights Football. There's other accounts as well that are pulling off clips. You're seeing other podcasts do this. You're seeing even some organizations and brands do this, of really creating multiple accounts to, you know, mix and riff off of different TikTok videos. And it really just speaks to as well the core mission of what you're really doing on TikTok. What is our goal? Is it to build a brand and get someone to really fall in love with the account? Is it to get views and eyeballs on specific content or specific videos, or just to get your content, your brand, your name, your certain storylines and narratives out there more? When you really sit down and think about what you're trying to accomplish, perhaps creating multiple accounts and, you know, riffing or creating different clips or creating different versions of clips is the way to go across multiple accounts, and you have a better chance of getting the right content in front of the right people that follow along or have their you know, algorithm attuned to the proper account that has the type of clips that you may have. We're already seeing teams and organizations across the board start to really diversify their content, whether it's more sports and X and O specific, based around broadcasters or athletes talking about the games, lifestyle content, of course, and all the different types of lifestyle content. So it really makes you think. So I'm not going to ramble on anymore, but that's a special shareable stat, and that is the At New Heights Rewind account, not the main account. The last 10 videos have averaged 23,042 views. Something to think about for sure, but more importantly, stick around because we're going to have some more fun and learn a lot more from Jordan Moore of USC Athletics. Back from this episode of the Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Jordan Moore. He is Chief Creative Officer and Broadcaster for USC Athletics. If you couldn't tell, he's a broadcaster. He has a wonderful broadcasting voice. I can listen to him call any game, anytime. But Jordan, you kicked ass in your interview. Are you now ready for a little catch and shoot?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's see. Number one, your favorite broadcaster growing up and your favorite broadcaster today.
You know, I think my favorite broadcaster growing up was Keith Jackson. As I mentioned, I grew up on Big Ten football and was a diehard Michigan fan as a kid. So that sort of Saturday afternoon ABC game and then ultimately him calling the Rose Bowl, you know, that's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, he's one of my favorites, but I can never do it. You know what I mean? It's just like he was so unique and so fantastic that hard to compare with that. I think so many of the guys now are fantastic. You know, I really like, you know, I'll shout out the two guys that that we see a bunch out here that Fox has used as their tent poles now. I think both Kevin Burkhart and Joe Davis are fantastic to lead the new era. We've had you know, guys like Jim Nance and Joe Buck are great and have been around for a long time and sort of just been here for generations now. But I do think it's exciting that those two guys have sort of earned their spot, gotten to know Joe a little bit, and just really, really two talented, super talented guys.
You know, I always tell people that once you start working in sports business, you kind of don't see a game the same way. Is that the same way for you with broadcasting? Like when you're watching a broadcast, are you like paying attention? Oh, that was a good, like he really recognized that really well. That was a good thing. Or his stats guy must be really good. Like, do you see little things when you're watching a broadcast like that?
I see preparation. That's what I see. I can tell when people haven't prepared and when they have. And that's the biggest piece of advice I've probably given any job, but particularly in broadcasting, is, you know, there's talented people that can sort of get by on shtick and you know, get through a game, but the real ones are the ones that put in the work, and you can tell.
Well, that's a perfect segue too, about speaking of putting in the work and preparing, going back to your days for the Orange County Flyers, you mentioned calling some independent league baseball back when you were first coming up down here in Orange County, nearabouts where we both are now. So tell me your favorite Orange County Flyers memory.
Oh, man. I mean, the craziest thing about minor league baseball is the buses. I mean, the amount of time that you would spend on a bus. And so we never flew anywhere. We bused everywhere. and the bus was pretty beat up. And you would bus from Yuma, Arizona, the hottest city in the country, which had a team in the league it was in, and you'd bus all the way up to Reno, Nevada, or Chico, California. So you're busing to, like, Northern California, basically. You're looking at like 12-hour bus rides, and we were on our bus. If it was going uphill, it could only go 12 miles an hour. So it would just crawl up these hills. And then we'd have pockets where, the bus would lose power, basically. So you just had no air conditioning. So guys are
Oh,
just sweating on the bus. And so everyone's just taking their shirts off and everyone's just gambling away their little per diem money that they have and just trying to make it through. And you're sleeping on the floor of a bus.
man.
But, what I liked about it the most is, whether it was around the cage or I always sat at the front of the bus because I was lucky enough that our coaches, our managers were really experienced guys. I mean, my first manager was Gary Templeton, who was
Wow.
one of the most famous baseball trades that ever was traded
Yeah.
straight up to Ozzie Smith. After that, Gary Carter was our manager, the late Gary Carter,
Oh.
who's a Hall of Fame catcher. We had Charlie Huff, the knuckleballer, as our pitching coach. So, just getting to pick these guys' brains. I mean, if again, you're going to find out if you like sports or not when you work in a situation, like minor league baseball. For me, I love it, and I love the stories that they had to tell. So those were my favorite times.
Love it, man. I mean, think about those buses. This is like before everyone had Netflix on their phone, probably. And so
Oh yeah.
you watch the communal movie, or you sleep, or you just have to actually talk to people.
Yeah. I remember when I had like a little personal DVD player or something, and I had The Departed, and I remember all the guys getting so mad at me because at that time I was young, and I didn't like shout out, "Hey, I got a new DVD, we should all watch it," kind of thing. And they were like, "Oh, you have this?" And it was just like, immediately it's on the communal TV because it's like everyone's just dying for some sort of
Right.
entertainment on this bus ride.
Oh, that is great. Just good times for sure. Good memories. Number three for you, Jordan. Tell me, if someone were to come up to Jay and say, "Hey, I'm like you were. I want to be a sports broadcaster when I grow up." What's the number one tip you would give that person?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, the number one tip is to get reps. I call anything, anytime, anywhere. The only way to get good at this is to do it. I can't tell you how to get good at it. It's as simple as it comes. Don't focus on your dream job. Just make sure the next job is better than the last job you've got. I always say, if your dream job was to be the LA Dodgers play-by-play guy, well, then you waited 60 years for the job to come open. So not a great plan. Don't get your heart set exactly on a place to be. You kind of have to be willing to go anywhere, do anything. But if you love it's worth it.
Great tip for sure. And there's no barrier to getting started now. Just get you can put it on a YouTube channel that no one watches, even if it's still reps. That's just a great thing to say.
For sure.
Number four, if you're doing, tell me the most important platform or channel to reach recruits. And the most important platform channel to reach donors.
I would say everything that we do in social media right now is based around Instagram.
Yeah.
Twitter was always my favorite platform, Twitter X. It's now, it doesn't put up anywhere near the numbers that the other ones do. Facebook is still a massive powerhouse globally, and so it has more value maybe than people could give it credit for, but it doesn't resonate in a way that it did 10 years ago by any stretch of the imagination. Instagram's the beast right now, I would say, for both fans and recruits. If you wanted to skew, specifically towards recruits, I think TikTok is obviously the other platform that obviously has ignited that generation. The thing about TikTok, it's you can really go there. I mean, you can put up big numbers there. You can do some really cool stuff. It is a little bit specific to their platform, though. You kind of have to like play their game. You got to lean into the trends that are happening. It's a little bit less like, hey, you can just create whatever you want and you determine what's cool. It's kind of like, hey, you got to fit here what everyone else thinks is cool and then find your spin on it. But yeah, I would say that Instagram is the central focus of what we do right now. And TikTok is probably the one that is targeted directly towards the younger generation, but
Totally.
I still think Instagram is a massive part of that group too.
And I've seen different approaches from different schools on TikTok. Some schools don't have an athletics program, athletics account at all. They just have their school program, a school account. But some have just an athletics account, but don't have, sports specific accounts. Do you guys have a set thing like, hey, USC Athletics and USC Football, USC Men's, or is if a sport wants to get their own TikTok account, you're like, oh yeah, let's work together, let's help you get it started. Like, what's kind of been your guys' approach there in brief? I know we're this is supposed to be the quick hitting questions.
No, exactly that though. If they want to start a TikTok, then we work with them to start it. But we're not forcing anyone to do it. It's such a specific platform again. And again, it's not worth doing anything half-assed or, just doing it for the sake of doing it. So, we put a lot onto our athletics TikTok and cover all the different sports in that. But if the individual sports want to have them as well, as long as they're dedicated to them, we'll work with them.
Totally. And the good thing about TikTok too is that it doesn't matter if you post. I mean, yes, you could say it matters for the algorithm, but ultimately, it doesn't really matter too much if you post, once a month, once every 6 months, once a week, once a day. No one's gonna know unless they go to your profile and check your timestamps.
Yeah, that's true of a lot of things right now. I mean, it's all this sort of very, the sort of chronological timeline is pretty much dead. It exists if you want it to, but I don't think most people put in the work for it to exist. So it's mostly just, can you create something that cuts through the noise?
Yeah, it's a really, really good point. Item number five for Jordan, tell me the most impressive or memorable student athlete during your time at USC so far. And you can answer one for just their sheer athletic performance, and then one maybe for outside the game, if it's a different student athlete you want to call out.
Wow, God, that's such a good one, and just shows my age because I've just been here long enough to have met many
You need
extremely
both, man. You
impressive
need both.
ones. And so many of them are impressive for, we had Jay Colson here, who's the blind long snapper, and he's such an just an impressive human being. But I'll call out too that I had relationships with, and that's sort of what sticks with me. But on court, we had a guy named Jordan McLaughlin, who's currently a backup point guard for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he's the most impressive, highest character student athlete that I've gotten to see in my time. I'm obviously a big basketball guy. I'm the voice of the basketball team now. When he chose USC, we were just horrific, and he really had to sort of bet on himself and bet on a vision. And did so, and everything that we have accomplished since started with that decision. So it's people like that when you go, how do you take a last place program? And the year before Coach Enfield came, we were 6-26. A few years later, we're in the Elite Eight, and we have lottery picks coming out of our ears, and it's used to go. It's easy. It's not easy. And it happens because of people like J Mac. And then one of my early favorites, a guy who I'm in close with is Matt Barkley. He was sort of the first quarterback that was here when I started working here. When you do what we do, most people don't know who you are, or they know who you are, but don't really get what you do. And so there's, a few people like who really get it, who take the time to know the staff and understand what they do, appreciate what they do. And Matt was always so tech savvy. So he was one of those guys in the early era that I just did a lot of work with. And he was always super into social media, took great advantage of everything that we did here. And to this day, does anything that we ask him to do, and is somebody you can always reach out to. So, those are two of the great guys, particularly from the early part of my career. But in terms of seeing incredible athletic feats, I mean, at a place like USC, you're bumping into Olympians every single day, and national champions, and All-Americans, and future pros. And so, I've gotten the opportunity to watch quite a few amazing athletes, become what they are.
Hell yeah. I mean, and shoot, speaking of like tech savvy, now I could probably add a third category to that question, and like the most talented content creator among athletes. Like, they're Just coming in with all these skills now too, and it's
And
only
that's a great one. I mean, because I've been here for the Juju Smith-Schusters and the guys that, just can build their brand. Michael Pittman Jr. Built an incredible YouTube channel. Victoria Garrick, who's become famous in the body image space, was a libero here for women's volleyball. So I always, again, I mentioned it earlier, social media is a participatory sport. So, there's a lot of athletes that, they might be walk-ons or they might be bench players or whatever, but have much bigger followings than the stars because
Totally.
they really invested in it.
The next one, Jordan, this is the one I'm interested to hear your answer. Oh, yeah, you're obviously around tons of sports that USC sponsors for athletics. But so tell me the non-revenue sport, and this is just for the US overall, not just for USC, but for the United States, the non-revenue sport that you would most buy stock in to hold for the next 5 years.
Oh wow. So not just, so this could be any sport.
This could be any sports, so we're excluding the quote unquote traditional revenue sports. So we're thinking about a sport that's going to be something that's gonna, sort of take off in the US, or at least be something that's gonna be on the rise, so that in 5 years your stock will be worth a lot more.
God, I mean boy, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the answer is probably something like pickleball or something. Or what's that game I saw the other day where you're playing soccer but you're playing it on a ping pong table? I saw that
Yeah.
blow up on my feed the other day. I don't even know what it's called. Yeah, I mean, that's a good question.
I
I'm
think
just trying.
a lot of people are eyeing volleyball as a big growth sport right now. Is
Yeah,
more
indoor
softball.
volleyball is a big growth sport in Europe. I don't know if it's ever going to be big here. My initial reaction when you were going to ask me the sport that that should be more popular than it is beach volleyball. Beach volleyball is phenomenal sport to play, phenomenal sport to watch. We've dominated it here over the last decade, but there still aren't a ton of schools around the country that play it. And I guess maybe it's a little bit limited to the warmer weather places. But to me, that's the sport. In every Olympics, it pops off.
Totally.
Anyway, I know that the tour doesn't do that well. So it's sort of, you're sort of asking a business question. From an entertainment standpoint, beach volleyball would be my answer. I do know that it doesn't do that well, though, and the AVP has struggled and all of that. So I think it's just a tough time for sports business. So it is hard to figure out what's going to go next. I mean, I guess if you were to look at the last 5 years, the answer would be Formula One, which, obviously has nothing to do with college athletics. It has everything to do with what we talk about, though, and access and social media and, Netflix. Sort of an extension of social media in a lot of ways. So like that's how it happens. So it is the sports like pickleball. It is like whatever the hell I was talking about with soccer and ping pong, whatever that sport is, like it's the ones that just sort of catch a fascination, or you provide access, or you create these characters. And yeah, I mean, but it is hard. I mean, you see, baseball's trending down. We think of the NBA as huge, but it still doesn't necessarily put up big numbers in the context of what the NFL does or even what
Right.
college football does. I'm involved in the college basketball world. It's massive 1 month a year, but it's not going anywhere, but it's also not going up. Lacrosse expanded out here and was hot for a while, but has also sort of plateaued a little bit in the West, and it doesn't feel like it's taken off a ton. The PLL is cool, but again, like is it truly going up? I think it's hard this day and age when you don't really have a monoculture, when everything's just sort of niche to feel like something actually is blowing up.
Totally, man. That was perfectly put. I had the word monoculture in my head as you were concluding there, because that's really what it's all about. We traditionally measure sports by like these national audiences, and getting 50 million people to watch an NFL game or 100 million people to watch the Super Bowl. And that's just like, if you think about the way that these social platforms are playing out now, or the way that Netflix and Amazon is giving you exactly what you want. It might be a part of a small community, very niche community. That's just how it's going to be. There might be some diehard fans, but it might not be that huge audience, because there's so many options now and everyone could find what they want. Ah,
Yep, for sure.
stuff.
I mean, the other answer I would say, at least around here, the growth of women's basketball is real. I think that the growth of women's basketball is real, particularly at the college level. Eventually, that'll spill hard into the WNBA, which ultimately needs more franchises and more cities and a longer season and a better television contract and more exposure. And I think all of that's coming when you look at Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins and all the, what's going on in South Carolina and what happens every year at Stanford and all these programs. I was watching the other day, I'm sitting there watching Iowa, Ohio State women's basketball because it was the lead into the NFL playoff game on NBC. And you go, that's how it's done. Like, and then I saw a day later that that was one of the highest rated women's basketball regular season game since 2010. So how do you do it? You give real time slots, and everyone knows Caitlin at this point. So, and she delivers. I think she had 38 points or something in the game. And I'm sitting there with my son watching the game. And like, that's, you gave them a time slot where all these NFL fans, which is what the only sport that really matters, from a television standpoint, and you give them that time slot and you can see it. And then we had, we played UCLA and had the largest crowd in our arena's history the other day. And it's, it's because of Juju. It's because we're winning. We're, top team now, but that's a sport that is real for sure.
Hell yeah. That's fantastic. I love hearing that too. But yeah, it's totally playing out just what we're watching happen. Number seven for you, Jordan, tell me, this can be interesting. Tell me the most important skill or skills that you need to do your job well.
I said writing earlier, and I think that that's the sort of the baseline skill that I look for in a social media person. I don't necessarily know that it's the most important thing in a designer or a video person, although it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt. So, I think as a social media person, I think the ability to write, to the ability to evoke emotion from words, is hugely important. Listen, for creatives, it's a talent. Like, it's just a natural kind of, you either have it or you don't. You could teach yourself a lot of these skills, but the people that I've been around that are great at this, they have a talent the way that the basketball players have a talent. There's a natural creativity to them. And I've just been lucky enough to be surrounded by a lot of them, and they do things with a camera or software that I can never even dream of. So it's hard for me to sort of, explain how they do any better than I can explain, why an athlete is able to do some of the things that they're physically capable of doing.
Do you find that ChatGPT, Bard, Claude, is generative AI going to dilute copywriting at all? Or is it only going to make it more powerful because you need to be strong to even give a good prompts?
I think copywriting is a little less important than it used to be in general. I mean, so much of what this generation wants is visual, but I don't think ChatGPT is going to steal the thunder there. If anything, I think it might affect the design space more, and some of the cool designs that we're seeing come out of it. I don't know. AI is going to affect everything, but I don't think we're quite there yet, but we're getting there.
If anything, it might make your point about being able to be a good writer even more important, because you have to be able to tell ChatGPT in a articulate way, or Midjourney or Dolly, whatever your image generators as well, exactly what you want with the right emotion, with the right words. And so you could kind of flip it on its head a little bit too, and be a little bit contrarian and say it makes it just as important, if not more important than ever.
Yeah, also be able to discern what's good and what's not good. The computer's going to spit out what it spits out, but you got to be able to decide what's good and what's not good.
Number eight for you, Jordan. It's time for our food question. Come down the wire here. Always got to ask our food question. Tell me the best meal to get in LA and where to get it. And if there's any food on the East Coast that you really miss, you can call it out too. But
wow,
where you spent the last decade plus.
Food's the real passion of my life. So there's about a million different restaurants and things I could shout out in this city. But I'll shout out one of the OGs. One of my favorite chefs is Roy Choi, who brought together this Korean Mexican fusion in LA, which is really been a major part of kicking off the food scene here. And those are the two sort of best food scenes in LA, are the Korean food and the Mexican food. So combine the two, shout out to an OG in Kogi Tacos and his whole spot. I'll give them a shout. I could be here all day. This is a whole nother 90-minute podcast on food if you want.
I love it. And believe it or not, you are not even the only podcast of 2024 that shout out Roy Choi. So that is amazing. I really gotta get up there now and
A
go to
legend.
Koji Food Truck.
Legend.
Number nine for you, Jordan. Tell me your favorite NIL story, your athlete or case study so far in that space. Like, what's been a whether it's a deal or just an activation or something that's been like that's really cool. When people talk about NIL, that's the story that comes to mind.
That's a good question. The first thing that comes to mind is simply that, like, okay, there's sort of two buckets of NIL. There's what, I call real NIL and what I call fake NIL. I don't think there's anything particularly interesting or fun about the fake NIL. That's just sort of how, it goes these days, which is that, someone goes in the portal and they know they can get X dollars and they change schools. So that's not particularly sexy or fun, but that is just how business is done these days. But the real NIL to me is great and sort of the initial intention of it all. And I just think what stood out to me is how successful female athletes have been in this space. I think everyone thought, oh, it would be dominated by football, and it has been in the fake NIL space. But I think when it comes to real NIL, we don't have a gymnastics team, but I know a lot of those women are crushing. But we have seen, I mentioned Amari Avery earlier, a women's golfer who's done phenomenally well. We had Simone Jackson who got a Nike deal, who's a women's soccer player for us. We've had track athletes that have done well. Juju Watkins is a true star, as you mentioned, on our women's basketball team. So I just think in general, I think it's been fun to see the people that the market actually dictated what they're worth, as opposed to the separate market of like what you're worth because we want you to win college football or college basketball games. I get that too, but the actual idea of NIL, I think has been cool to see the people succeed that capture an audience in a different way than just being good at their sport.
Yeah, I mean, people can say what they want, but honestly, I can't see any argument that NIL has not been just a tremendous net positive for college athletics, and will continue to be. So great to hear some of the stories even from your end at USC there and beyond. All right, Jordan, time for the hardest question, the last one here. This is going to be the toughest one you're going to get. Tell me who is on the all-time USC Athletics Mount Rushmore.
Oh my God. All time for USC Athletics.
It's an impossible question.
It
So
is an impossible question. I think I would do two football, and I would probably have Marcus Allen and Reggie Bush. One sort of the old generation of football, and Marcus probably the greatest player ever to play here. And then Reggie's sort of indicative of this new generation. And, I think the reason a lot of people are USC fans is Reggie Bush. So I think both of them need to be on there. I would put Cheryl Miller on there, arguably the greatest women's basketball player ever, two-time national champion here at USC. God, that leaves one more spot for me. You know, it's funny. I mean, she didn't compete here, so I guess I can't put her on. But I mean, really, Allyson Felix is kind of the fourth person that I would think of in that spot to sort of represent the Olympic sports and our Olympic heritage, which is our biggest, something that we take such pride in. Even though she didn't compete here, I probably would put Allyson there as the most decorated U.S. female Olympian ever and most decorated track Olympian ever. And a true Trojan, and our field is named after her. So to me, she would probably fit that Olympic bill the best.
I like it. I don't think anyone can. I mean, people might have other opinions, but they cannot say that there's anything wrong without Mount Rushmore for
Yeah,
SC.
we've got some great baseball ones too. I was going through it. I mean, the Tom Seavers and Mark McGwire, Randy Johnsons.
My
So we
goodness.
have pretty great baseball heritage too. So lots to choose from in that area. And we mentioned beach volleyball earlier. April Ross
Yeah.
won two national championships indoor here, and then has since become an American beach volleyball star. So just too many to count.
It's a good problem to have for sure. Too
That's
many
for
heroes,
sure.
all-time greats. All right, Jordan, kick the ass and you're catch and shoot. Lots of swishes, lots of three pointers. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Just tell us who they are, what platform or platforms they're on, and why they're following.
Do we want a USC person or do we want a non-USC person?
Entirely up to you. I'm looking for a good follow for the listeners.
Well, you know what? I'll shout out a guy that I've been with from day one. He's at Trojans Photog on Instagram, and that's my photographer, John McGillen. John, when he came in, was just a student in 2010. I think I'd been on the job for a couple months and realized that photos apparently were an important part of it and did not realize that and desperately needed a photographer. And he just came in as a student, showed me a couple of things. I was like, great, you're hired. I would not say it was the most rigorous hiring process, but I stumbled into one of the best photographers in Southern California for sure. John has shot for Adidas and the NFL and a bunch of other people as well. But everything we do is starts with our media days and the photos that we take and his ability to push himself creatively and capture new lighting and challenge himself and all the different colors and ideas that he comes up with. Really super talented guy and has been a major part of everything that we do.
Love it. That's fantastic. Like you mentioned earlier, some people are elite at their sport, some people are elite at photography, and it sounds like he's definitely one of them.
For sure, for sure.
How about you, Jordan? Where can we find you individually as well as all things USC Athletics? Of course, I don't expect you to name off all the several dozen of handles, but just generally, where can we go to find SC?
Yeah, you can find me at Moore Sports on Twitter X, Moore with two O's, and I'm at JoJoMo9 on Instagram. Yeah, I mean we got a lot of handles, but at USC underscore athletics is the main one that we run across all our different accounts. We're on every single platform, and you could see my face a lot on YouTube as a lot of our broadcast content is on there. So our USC Trojans channel on YouTube for sure.
Hell yeah, follow along. I honestly, there are so many times I've come across some just tremendous USC Athletics content, and I really enjoyed getting to know you today, as well as learning more all about the Trojans and what makes them tick from a social media perspective. And thanks so much for coming on the podcast today, Jordan, and best luck the rest of the season as you guys close out your final season with all sports in the Pac-12.
Thanks so much, fight on.
Thanks so much again to Jordan Moore, Chief Creative Officer and broadcaster for USC Athletics. Just so much interesting stuff. Really enjoyed the conversation throughout, the point around marketing athletes and what this means in the NIL era as they try to build generational fans, long-term fans, how they treat every sport, how they really unify the USC brand while giving sports the flexibility as well. Just so much good stuff. I hope you learned a lot because I sure did and cannot thank Jordan enough for coming on the podcast today, especially during a crazy part of the year when sports are starting to cross over and really no downtime for college athletics these days. With the exception of maybe the very, very middle of summer. Even then, you're still working ahead. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJH287, on LinkedIn. Connect with me there and look for more content. Go to the website for everything, dsmsports.net. And please subscribe, check out the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.